This is KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Tuesday, April 12th of 2022. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's show, we'll chat with an Erie-based author of a new thriller ahead of his book presentation tonight in Boulder. Turning plastic into a climate solution? That story and more on H2O Radio's This Week in Water. And we'll go to our comment line to hear what's on the minds of listeners. At the bottom of the hour, we'll have an update from the BBC News headlines. Then it's How on Earth. On this week's science show, host Joel Parker presents part two of his conversation with Dr. Emily Levesque. At 9:30 comes Alan Watts, the British philosopher, writer, and speaker, known for interpreting Eastern religious ideas for a Western audience. Then at 9:30, Ginger Perry will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. All that's still ahead, but first it's time for local and regional headlines with KGNU's Jada Rodriguez.
Boulder County Public Health announced yesterday real-time air quality data covering the Marshall Fire burn area is now available to the public. The agency says that it has positioned 25 state-of-the-art monitors throughout the affected area, including all schools near the burn zones. The monitors track ultrafine pollutants, or particulate matter, which is 30 times smaller than a strand of hair. The monitors provide results that are in alignment with the Environmental Protection Agency's Air Quality Index. The AQI value between 0 and 50 represents good air quality, above 100 is unhealthy, and a value over 300 represents hazardous air quality. The public can access the real-time results through the Boulder County Public Health website and sign up for emails and text alerts at boco.org/marshallfireaq. Supporters of fired Aurora Police Chief Vanessa Wilson gathered on the steps of Aurora City Hall to criticize her firing. KGNU's Steve Miller has more.
Supporters of former Police Chief Wilson, who rallied Monday at Aurora City Hall, say that the decision to fire her was a political-motivated vendetta. The Denver Gazette reports that Wilson's defenders feel that she struck a necessary balance between solving crime, equitable policing of marginalized people, supporting officers, and holding them accountable. They also said that the firing of Wilson was a culmination of a coordinated effort by a new conservative majority on city council. Former Chief Wilson also spoke at the rally, saying that there shouldn't be what she called partisan politics involved in public safety. Wilson made a practice of publicly announcing decisions to discipline officers, especially in cases of excessive force. City Manager Jim Twombly fired Wilson last week, saying that the reason behind his decision was a continued loss of confidence in her overall leadership and overall management. Wilson was appointed chief in August of 2020 as the Aurora Police Department was roiling with controversy because of 23-year-old Elijah McClain's death during a police stop in 2019. For KGNU, I'm Steve Miller.
The Colorado Public Utilities Commission rejected a pause request by Xcel Energy in awarding the remaining bids for 75 megawatts of new community solar gardens last month. The Colorado Sun reports Xcel had awarded about half of the developer bids for community solar gardens, but claimed the rest were too expensive and would drain the low-income subsidies from the Renewable Energy Fund. The utility said it wanted to put off awarding more projects until it was a study. Solar builders and advocates urged Xcel was stalling the full implementation of the program in order to protect its principal business. According to the Colorado Sun, community solar gardens are small clusters of solar panels that collect and store energy. Under the program, consumers who subscribe to the solar garden receive a credit on their Xcel bill for energy that came from solar panels. The program also provides a subsidy for low-income residents paid for by the Renewable Energy Fund, a collection of money drawn from all utility bills in Colorado. The utility told the Colorado Sun it has now awarded all the contracts but declined further comment. The Denver International Airport was the third busiest airport in the world in 2021. This according to ranking by the trade group Airports Council International. The nation's airports dominated the top 10 rankings with strong domestic travel and slower pandemic recovery in Asia and Europe markets. The Haspid-Jackson Atlanta International Airport ranked first, with Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport ranking second. Chicago O'Hare followed DIA in fourth place, and LAX in Los Angeles ranked fifth. During 2021, close to 59 million passengers traveled through DIA, a 15% dip from the pre-pandemic numbers. In 2020, the trade group ranked DIA number 8 and number 16 in 2019. The Colorado Department of Motor Vehicles has decided to expand the number of offices where immigrants can apply for driver's licenses or identification cards, regardless of their immigration status. Because the Colorado General Assembly passed bipartisan legislation in 2013 under Senate Bill 251, which allows immigrants to apply for a driver's license or identification card under certain criteria, state officials often refer to the program as SB 251 license. Under the recent expansion, the agency has added 6 offices in the Denver metro area and 2 in northern Colorado that will offer the SB 251 appointments. According to the Colorado Immigrants' Rights Coalition, the expansion ensures the availability of appointments in areas of the state with highest demands. Groups supporting the expansion say a license can be life-altering for immigrant families by making a positive difference for work, school, and medical appointment transportation, and for making roads safer because more drivers will gain proper licensure, insurance, and vehicle inspection. Today's weather includes a slight chance of rain this morning and a chance of rain and snow midday. Today's highs will be in the upper 40s, low 50s. Today will be mostly cloudy with a continued chance of rain and snow and lows in the 20s. Winds could gust as high as 34 miles per hour. The current temperature in Boulder is 34 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Jada Rodriguez.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. What are the chances of winning the multi-million dollar lottery the same day of a beloved spouse's funeral? Well, that is the lucky and not so lucky setting that kicks off the bizarre spiral of Aiden Marlowe, the main character in the new twisted thriller from Erie-based author Carter Wilson. Wilson joins us in the studio today to discuss his new psychological thriller, The New Neighbor. Carter will be speaking with KGNU's Stacey Johnson. Good morning to you both.
Good morning. Thank you, Carter, for dropping by the studio this morning. You'll be presenting your book, The New Neighbor, this evening at the Boulder Bookstore. Can you tell us a little bit about the book and how it came together for you?
Yeah, good morning. Thank you for having me here. I don't outline. I don't know how to outline. A lot of my writer friends outline really well. All I ever do is think of an opening scene. And as described in the opening, that opening scene for me was simply, what if a man, mid-30s, suddenly loses his spouse and he wins the lottery on the same day of her funeral? Yeah, I spent a lot of time just throwing things at my protagonist, so I just want to see how they're going to react to that. So that was that opening scene that occurred to me.
You're more of a standalone story author instead of an author who produces a series of thrillers. But with this book, you have a return to place, a town and mansion home in New Hampshire, which were part of your book released last year called The Dead Husband. What made you create another story in that setting?
Yeah, and you're right. I do mostly write standalone novels. But I had written The Dead Husband, and I had created this town of Bury, New Hampshire, and I had created this mansion that had this kind of malevolence about it. And I finished writing that book, and I was not done exploring that house. So I decided I was going to take this recent widower and the new neighbor and have him move to that house. So it was a little bit of a trick trying to figure out how do I make both these stories standalone tales, but having crossover elements without spoiling too many things. But if you read both of them, a lot more mystery is revealed.
The main character, Aiden, has 7-year-old twins, a boy and a girl. Did the children in your life provide the muse for those characters, especially the twin boy and Beau?
Fortunately, my kids are much older than that. It definitely, you tap into that paternal instinct when you're writing about kids and trying to kind of see the struggles that they had through their eyes. Definitely, it was helpful having kids going through that process.
And Aiden and his father in the book come from Ireland. What inspired you or prompted you to have those characters be natives of Ireland?
That's a great question. I no clue. You know, that, again, like kind of that opening scene that just occurs to me, I just decided this guy is Irish, and that made it a lot more difficult. But he needed to be Irish for some reason to me. So then I had to obviously research dialects and make sure that I was being a little bit true to his heritage.
This is your eighth published work within the genre of psychological thrillers. Is that correct?
That's right.
And what draws you to this genre?
That's a good question. When I started writing, I kind of started writing without any reason to do so in my 30s. And so I didn't know what I was doing, and I didn't know I was writing thrillers. And the agent who I was able to get with my first book told me, oh, you're writing thrillers. I'm like, oh, okay. I didn't realize that. I just like, you know, writing about conflict and seeing somebody struggle and seeing how they're going to get out of it. Cause I kind of put myself in their shoes of like, what are you going to do now? So usually I face my characters with pretty dark things and see how they struggle through it. So I don't know why I'm attracted to it. I had a very normal childhood.
Okay. And I read, you started off your writing career by doing an exercise, and by doing that exercise, you did a 400-page some transcript. What exactly was that exercise?
I was in a class for continuing education. This very boring class for the job I used to have, and I was bored out of my mind. And so I had 2 hours left in this class, and so I decided to pose myself a riddle and see if I could solve that riddle by the end of the class. So I literally wrote down like a murder mystery riddle, and I'm like, okay, what is the answer to this riddle? And I couldn't figure it out. And that riddle kept gnawing at me. So I started to write as I got home. And over the course of 3 months, I wrote this 400-page manuscript. And it was, the first time I had done anything like that. And so, I sat up and paid attention and say, maybe this is something I should be doing with my life.
One last question. Are you also a frequent lotto player like Aiden, who plays the same numbers each time?
I used to be. I followed in my father's footsteps, who would play the same numbers. And so for years and years and years, I did it. And probably about 5 years ago, I just stopped because I'm like, this is ridiculous. And I vowed never to go check the winning numbers ever, because God forbid those numbers actually hit after I stopped playing them. I don't even remember what they are now. But I've always wanted to write about lottery winners because there's a real darkness around lottery winners and misfortune. So I thought it was an interesting subject to explore.
Carter Wilson will be presenting his book, The New Neighbor, tonight at the Boulder Bookstore beginning at 6:30 p.m. Carter, thanks again for spending your morning with us.
Thank you very much.
Time now for the latest edition of This Week in Water with Jamie Sudler and Franny Halperin.
Turning plastic into a climate solution. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
We have the tools, but there isn't the political will to use them. That's the main takeaway from the latest report from the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change that details the steps needed to avoid the worst consequences of global warming.
The Paris Agreement set a goal to limit warming at 1.5 degrees Celsius, and to get there, the panel says greenhouse gas emissions must peak within the next 3 years and then be reduced by more than 40% by 2030.
But right now, we're on track to hit more than twice that, or 3.2 degrees by 2100, which would be devastating.
Politicians and companies are not acting with the urgency needed, and some countries, like Saudi Arabia, argued against language calling for sharply reducing fossil fuel use. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said in a press conference that there have been a litany of broken promises, with some government and business leaders saying one thing and doing another. Simply put, he said, they are lying.
The report says we have the tools we need. The costs of solar and wind power are decreasing. Methane leaks from mines, oil and gas wells, and landfills can be plugged. Also, driving electric vehicles and eating less meat will lead to lower emissions.
Speaking of solutions, a team of researchers at Rice University have found a way to take one of our most pressing environmental problems, plastic pollution, and have it address another issue, greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. They were able to make plastic waste capture carbon.
They used a process called pyrolysis, which is a common way to chemically recycle plastic. But in their experiment, they ground the plastic into a powder and then added potassium acetate. When it was heated at high temperatures, it produced porous particles that were highly effective in trapping CO2 and could even be used over and over.
The researchers say smokestacks at power plants could be fitted with the waste plastic material to remove carbon dioxide, and that a wax byproduct of the process could be recycled into detergents or lubricants.
Additionally, they say certain plastics, such as polypropylene and polyethylene, that are hard to chemically recycle, are well suited to their method.
Current technologies to capture CO2 from natural gas flues are expensive, costing up to $160 per ton of carbon extracted, but the plastic waste material could cut that price by about 90%.
The IPCC report says that carbon capture technologies might be necessary, but are no substitute for getting off fossil fuels.
Cargo ships are illegally dumping oily and toxic wastewater into the oceans with potentially devastating effects on ecosystems.
An investigation by the nonprofit group Lighthouse Reports showed that ship crews use different methods to bypass safeguards and avoid detection.
Tens of thousands of cargo ships, some with huge engines, ply the oceans each day. Lubricants, cleaning solvents, and metals, including lead, mercury, and arsenic, collect in the bilge or bottom of the vessels and are stored in tanks. One ship can produce several tons of bilge water daily.
Large vessels are required to remove pollutants from bilge water before releasing it into the ocean at limits set by the International Maritime Organization. What remains is stored for offloading in a port facility, but to avoid costs, some dump it on the high seas.
By using satellites, the environmental group Sky Truth identified hundreds of potential releases across the world last year alone, but that number is likely significantly higher. They estimate that more than 50 million gallons of bilge water are released each year, about five times the amount of the Exxon Valdez spill in Alaska 33 years ago.
Whistleblowers told the investigators that bilge water is dumped sometimes at night or during bad weather when there is a lower chance of getting caught.
And finally, we've all been there. You reach into the freezer to grab a bowl of your favorite ice cream and, ugh, it's full of ice crystals. How did that happen?
All ice creams have ice crystals, but when they're freshly made, they're very small and not noticeable. But as its temperature fluctuates, either from shipping, storage, and even the trip home from the grocery store, the crystals can get larger and group together, resulting in the annoying crunch.
Manufacturers typically add stabilizers like guar gum to slow crystal growth, but it doesn't stop it completely. So, scientists at the University of Tennessee wanted to tackle this vexing problem.
First, they looked to nature. Many creatures that live in extremely cold environments have a natural antifreeze, proteins that fight the growth of ice that would damage their tissues.
But those proteins are difficult and expensive to harness. So the researchers decided to test cellulose from plants because they have properties similar to the protein antifreeze but are widely available from agricultural and forestry waste.
The team found that cellulose was better at stopping the formation of crystals than current stabilizers and slowed how fast the ice cream melted. They say the plant material could potentially be used for other frozen foods, or even better, it could preserve organs being donated for medical transplants.
That's it for This Week in Water. Support comes from GC Green, a veteran, woman, and Native American-owned clean energy and resiliency solutions company. Learn more at gcgreen.com.
Poets are the antennae of the race. Tune in to a special National Poetry Month edition of Hemispheres. Hear rebel poets Anne Waldman, Joanne Kiger, Amiri Baraka, Peter Lamborn Wilson, and Allen Ginsberg. Tuesday at 6, right here on KGNU's Hemispheres.
We now check in with KGNU's comment line and the listeners who share their thoughts about what they hear on KGNU.
Hi. I hesitate to call because this is so minor. But anyway, I'm calling. Your person who reads the news in the morning is wonderful in most regards. I mean, her pronunciation, her pace, everything. But she says A instead of a. Nobody says a dog. We say a dog. And except Kermit the Frog says a dog. Anyway, that's sort of an aside. I'm sorry. Anyway, that's something. And then the pronunciation of the word library. She says library like so many people do, but she could correct that and pronounce it correctly. And I hesitate to give my name and phone number because I don't. This is so minor, so I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to leave my phone number. Thank you. Bye-bye.
I just wanted to commend Stacy Johnson and KGNU for Wednesday morning's program with Cody Willistrom talking about how the county is going to supervise the contractors that are working on the Marshall cleanup. And there were more questions answered today than in all the weeks that I've been reading the camera. And I think you should rerun the interview at a later time again, because those are the questions that people have, like where are the landfills and how is all of this debris going to be transported and what happens to the burned out autos and propane tanks that can be recycled and how do the contractors wrap up the toxic debris. It was an excellent, excellent program. And I commend KGNU and Stacy for arranging for the speaker. And I really feel you should run it in the evening or when you have a different audience base. This is Joan in Boulder. You can say that on the air. Thank you for this excellent program on Wednesday morning.
Hi. I turned on the radio about 5:30. The BBC was on. I heard the same news that I had heard that morning, the exact same news. I turned it off. I can listen to another radio station. Tell me, what's the point? Thank you.
If you'd like to make a comment on something you heard on KGNU, you can leave us a message at our listener comment line at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesday mornings at 8:25. Comments longer than 90 seconds may be edited for brevity. And as with concert ticket giveaways, we ask that commenters wait 30 days between comments for broadcast.
Hello, KGNU listeners. You are the U in KGNU, and today we're asking for your input. Please head over to kgnu.org to help take part in a local audience survey. Help us learn more about the content you enjoy most on KGNU, your preferred way to engage with the media, and the types of information gaps you see in our local media landscape. The survey takes about 10 to 15 minutes. Your input will help us better understand what our listeners and community looks for in their local media environment. You can find the survey on kgnu.org, and thank you so much for your input.
Hola, oyentes de KGNU. Ustedes son la U en KGNU. Y hoy día estamos pidiendo que nos den sus opiniones. Por favor, vayan a kgnu.org para completar una encuesta para la audiencia local. Ayúdenos a aprender más sobre el tipo de contenido de KGNU que más valoran, sus maneras preferidas de consumir y participar en los medios, y las brechas de información que perciben en nuestro panorama de medios locales. La encuesta toma aproximadamente entre 10 y 15 minutos. Sus perspectivas nos ayudarán a entender mejor lo que nuestros oyentes y nuestra comunidad buscan en el ambiente de medios locales. Pueden encontrar la encuesta en kgnu.org y muchas gracias por brindarnos sus puntos de vista.
That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. Thanks to Stacey Johnson, Steve Miller, Jada Rodriguez, Alexis Kenyon, Rosanna Longo-Better, Jamie Sudler, and Franny Halperin for their contributions to today's program. I've been your host, Shannon Young. Stay tuned for How on Earth. That's coming up after these messages and the news headlines from the BBC.